So there's actually a secret agenda to this talk, and this is to mentally prepare you that there will be a QLIT workshop. Yeah. So in this QLIT workshop, it will be at the 9th and the 10th, just over at IQC. And if suddenly, after this presentation, you become interested in QLITs, then you please register and come over to IQC for the 9th and 10th for our QLIT workshop. And if you get even more passionate about QLITs, you could even register for the retreat, because at the 11th, we have a QLIT retreat specifically at Pyramid Institute, or like at our retreat locations. Okay, good. So this is a topic that in my group we are started a while ago, and that we are also working towards expanding. And my presentation for today is basically, based on this paper. And if you scan this code, so this code, I think, should take you straight to this paper where you will see all the details that I will be necessarily omitting. Oops, oh no, I just wanted to shift it more so that I'm not standing in the middle of the slide. Maybe I have to stand over there. Yes.
Yeah, coming up.
Okay. Oh, but I have the same thing. No, that's actually quite good. Okay, perfect. Okay, that is an overview. So I will start by an introduction. Then I will emphasize how we are using QLITs. So we are currently using QLITs, not in general, but specifically in order to make quantum simulations in the context of particle physics. And then point three is basically explaining why that is so convenient. And number four is about the D in QLITs, like how many levels we can use and how we can increase this. And then in number five, I will talk about some conclusions. And the whole talk is basically also an invitation, because here we did a first quantum algorithm with the QLITs, and we were actually quite amazed how efficient it is and how much we could push the envelope compared to using qubits. And now we are all very motivated, but we are also seeing that a lot of tools are missing, like for error mitigation, for error correction. And like, we are starting now inventing and also developing all these tools. So there is interest maybe in QLIT development of algorithms, quantum error corrections, and that's also an invitation to talk to us on, to join us on that. Okay, but let me tell you first what this is all about. So classical computing, like this laptop, for instance, which I keep shifting around, is basically using zeros and ones almost exclusively. And if you look at most of the quantum computing hardware, especially the big players, it's also based on zeros and ones, same story, just we put it in a superposition. And the whole aim of the game of what I want to share today, as I said, is going beyond binary to go to D levels. And one thing that's really motivating this is that today's quantum hardware, like all platforms actually, are completely capable of using QLIT encoding. Yeah, so I am thinking trapped ions. I will be talking about trapped ions today. Superconducting architectures for sure. Rydberg atoms in optical tweezers, absolutely. Ultra-cold atoms in optical lattices, nuclear spins, photonic systems anyways. Yeah, and so like as far as the hardware is concerned, like you absolutely can use more than two levels. And there is actually a very exciting, timely aspect to it, because people have been thinking about this in the past. So I will later on point you to a review on QLITs, where basically it has been recognized, oh my god, that's very resource efficient. You have smaller registers, you have smaller circuits. It's like even beneficial for quantum error correction. However, it used to be a thing, you know, on paper, on the blackboard, yeah? Because there were really no good entangling gates in the lab, yeah? And if you don't have entangling gates, what do you do? Basically almost nothing. But like we're like really in a shift right now where QLITs become a reality, like in the lab, like on the hardware, and now really high fidelity gates become available. So like now is actually a time where we can start doing something, and it can be even realized in the lab. So that's like almost like a phase transition which is happening now. Okay, and how we got started to have something really concrete for going beyond binary is we looked at lattice gauge theories, and that is already the whole talk in one slide. If you don't take anything away, like everything is just details on the slide, is that we look at lattice gauge theories, like theories for particle physics, and they are naturally in a gauge theory, you would have a gauge field, and this is a very natural match to describe this with a qdot. And the reward that we reap is that we can have circuits which are incredibly short depth. Yeah, and that is really what got us excited, this specific thing, because like in my group, we're doing a lot of quantum simulations, and our bottleneck most of the time is really the gate depth. That's what's killing us. Yeah, it's not the register size. No, it's really that we cannot concatenate enough gates to do something meaningful. And if all of a sudden our highly complex models shrink into a very short circuit, I mean, this is even an all-to-all circuit in trapped ions, then this brings like very complex models much closer into reach. Yeah, so this shrinkage of into short depth circuits was really, for us, the most motivating thing here. Okay, so here I said there are not terribly many reviews on qdots, but there's a very good review article, and it's co-authored by Barry. So Barry also was here at Parameter a short while ago, and so we're also looking to join forces with him on that. Oh yeah, if you want to know why I'm looking like this, there's a perfectly natural explanation, which I will be happy to share. If you follow me on LinkedIn, you already know. Okay, but so here, of course, as I mentioned, the important aspect to me is also that there's an experimental reality to that, and this is why, from the get-go, I want to acknowledge our experimental heroes. Yeah, so that's in Innsbruck in Austria, so that's Martin Ringbauer, and like his experiment, so he's a group leader of the qdot experiment. It's embedded in the bigger lab of Rainer Blatt, and the amazing PhD student who really brought these high-fidelity gates to life is Mike Mead. Okay, and all these results are also a collaboration, intercontinental, across 6,000 kilometers the Atlantic. So the theory side being done in Waterloo and then experimental side in Innsbruck. Okay, so what do we look at? That is just a reminder. We look at gauge theories, and gauge theories, of course, like, oh my God, they're playing such a big role in so many different areas. But we're, for the moment, not thinking of gauge theories in condensed matter systems, for instance, but specifically for the purpose of this talk, gauge theories really for particle physics. Yeah, so like really the theories that underlie the standard model of particle physics. And that is really with the big vision to simulate particle physics. So that's basically the goal that we are working towards, to both understanding the physics within the standard model of particle physics one day. I mean, of course, we're in the very beginning of that, but that is basically the aim that motivates everything. And also, simulations are also incredibly important to, for at some point, notice when the standard model fails. And there, as many of you know, there are certain types of problems, or classes of problems, I should rather say, which are inaccessible to the current methods. I really have to say that, of course, it's just incredibly successful. It's just mind-blowing what particle physics and standard Markov-Chain Monte Carlo can do. But there are certain areas where you cannot even begin to calculate something. Yeah, and those are, for instance, real-time evolutions. Or like we would call it, as a quantum physicist, I would call it dynamics. Yeah, or anything which has a finite chemical, fermionic chemical potential, like high matter density problems. Oh, and like in my group, we're really thinking about these things a lot. And if you want to connect to us and talk to us about, so we have Yasser Attas and also Avijit, like two very talented postdocs who are working in my group specifically on quantum simulations of lattice gauge theories. So like we are very happy to connect and to discuss on how to teach a quantum computer to simulate such problems. Okay, so we used to do everything with qubits, and now we realize that qdots are actually really helpful. And why is that? So if you're like me, and if you're in the business of wanting to teach a quantum computer to simulate such a model, you will very quickly realize there are a couple of hurdles. And here are two major hurdles which really can give you a headache if you want to do that. So the first one, it's a gauge theory, and I will introduce it in a moment. But since you have a gauge theory, you really have to simulate your gauge fields. And that's a bit inconvenient because they live in infinite dimensional Hilbert space. And the other thing is that, of course, the big goal is to simulate nature. Nature is 3D, yeah? And in this area, in this field, we start with simple toy models. And as a field, we have figured out how to do 1D, which is encouraging, but of course, we need to do 3D in order to simulate nature. So these are two hurdles that basically, if you also review the literature, that people get stuck. Yeah. Okay, in order to explain this a little bit better, I'm going to show a gauge theory in 1D so we can wrap our brains around it. So this is one-dimensional space and it's discretized, and the lattice vertices are here shown in black, and this is where matter lives, and the gauge fields are defined on the links that connect the vertices. And as I alluded to earlier, well, this is a gauge field. It's like really living in an infinite dimensional system. So I'm here depicting, So this basically is one gauge field, and for each link you have one of those. And I want to be concrete, so I use quantum electrodynamics as an example, but everything that I say per se carries over to other gauge theories as well. So in QED, I'm depicting here the eigenstate of the electric field operator, right? Because in QED, I only have charged particles, I have electric and magnetic fields. And well, something that I want to convey here visually is, okay, so if you're in the Hamiltonian formalism, you have this infinite dimensional number system with infinitely many states. And if you want to do a simulation in the Hamiltonian formalism, be it on a classical computer with tensor network states or on a quantum computer, we got a truncate, right? And so here's the minimal truncation, yeah? Because we allow for no gauge field, so the electric field is in the vacuum, or we can have plus one or minus one. Plus one and minus one in 1D means going in positive direction, or one flux going in negative direction. So it's really the absolute minimum that you need. And this just looks like a Q-trit, doesn't it? So this is really naturally a Q-trit. And if you want, and this is just some different ways how you can truncate. So that's up to you how you want to truncate the whole business in its own, how to do it or not do it. And if you want to be less brutal, then it's a Q-quint, right? Because then you can distinguish not only having no flux, but to have flux or even more flux, yeah? Or then you have a Q-sept, and how do you call it with nine? I don't know. Yes, but for sure, like you see that this is a theory, just how the theory is defined, high dimensional systems just pop up, yeah? And then my old self, a couple of years ago, what would she do? She would actually go and decompose everything in qubits, yeah? Because I wanted to run it on, yeah, the trapped ions, which used to have qubits. We ran things on the IBM quantum hardware, for instance, yeah. But a lot of things happen if you are like my old self and decompose everything in qubits. So first off, if you have like only one Q quint, like, or one Q trit, like you need more qubits for that. But even more importantly, like if you have ever done it, like you know that the type of interaction get really ugly really fast, yeah? So I mean, you have a beautiful theory which has, for instance, two body terms, yeah, in some parts. No problem with that, yeah? But like you decompose it in qubits and then all of a sudden you have really ugly four-body term, yeah? And yeah, so long story short, this is a theory which practically is begging you to be simulated with qubits because that's its natural organic language, yeah? Okay, and caveat to tell you the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. If you are in 1D, okay, if you're in 1D with open boundary conditions, you do not have this problem because there's a nice gauge transformation which can let you eliminate the gauge fields. Okay, so like if you only want to do 1D, open boundary conditions, like you don't have to represent the gauge fields at all. Yeah. So this is what I mean by saying the gauge fields can be eliminated, and like we did that, yeah, we totally did that in the past in 2016, because like we wanted to make this was theory and experiment, and like we wanted to make it work, and it was like 2016, it was the first time that this has been done, and well, we were just very happy to be even able to do 1D, and then we didn't simulate the gauge fields at all because it was 1D. And which actually at the time even was quite a big deal to be able to do it even in 1D. So it was even one of the breakthroughs in physics in 2016 at the time. But it's of course not the whole story that you won. No, the whole story is already when we did that experiment, I already really wanted to do 2D. Why? Because in 1D you don't have magnetic fields. Yeah? And like in order to have also magnetic fields, see magnetic field effects, and also have the Fermi statistics play a role, like I think it's no doubt that we need to go beyond 1D. And in terms of the conceptual difficulty, it's like really a step function, yeah, to go beyond 1D. So that was the aim of the game. This was what took us now 5 years to do since then. This is just reiterating 1D is great, but there are no magnetic fields, so we really need to go beyond that. And if you go beyond 1D, if you go to 2D, then the letters look similar. Like again, on the vertices, you have the matter, on the links, you have the gauge fields. And like each gauge field, again, is like infinite dimensional. But this time around, because you're in 2D, you cannot eliminate it. Yeah? So no excuse, no escape. You really have to simulate your gauge field, which is, of course, clear, because someone has to represent the magnetic fields. No? Right. And there's a review article if you want to know more about the whole field, how this developed. And again, cutting right to the chase, which you will see if you look in the reviews also. So there was like really strong motivation to go to 1D. Yeah, so like as you see in the review, not only we did 1D, like by then like many different groups on different platforms with different types of hardware have done 1D. And also there was a lot of effort to go to 2D, like for instance 2D just but with trivial gauge fields, or 2D with trivial matter, but because there are transformations that would allow you to transform something away if you make either of them trivial. But of course, we need the full gauge theory, by which I mean the full non-trivial dynamical matter and the full non-trivial dynamical gauge fields. And even so, there were impressive advances, so that was not possible with these qubit-based approaches so far. And I'm talking again about particle physics, not condensed matter physics, like really continuous gauge groups. Okay, and that is really, like everyone else, we were also like really hard working on trying to accomplish this. And this is really where the qubits came into our rescue. So, and if I say qubits, now is the right time to tell you which type of qubits I'm talking about. So I'm really talking about a linear trap. So this is indeed a 1D system, but we have all-to-all connectivity. And this is why we can simulate an arbitrary geometry. And this is also why we can simulate 2D with just a linear chain. And well, this is a system which traditionally has these famous Milne-Sørensen gates, which are qubit gates, and an extension of the qubit entangling gates to mixed-dimensional qubit systems with high fidelity was really what was the magic ingredient which made everything work. Because, as I said, like in the end of the day, we will have to run a circuit, and if the circuit has only crappy gates, this will not give us anything. No? Okay, so what are our qubits? So this is like a totally cooked down calcium 40 level scheme, because calcium 40 is what they use. So I'm looking here at the S1 half ground state manifold and the D5 half. So the P1 half is just used for readout and detection. But okay, so first I should add that you can use these ions as qubits or qudits as you, as a user, see fit. Yeah. So you can, for instance, say, oh, I want this one to be a qubit and I want this four to be qudits. Yeah, you could even use one qubit, one qutrit, one qquint, yeah, because it's like all the same trapped ions. Is up to you how you want to use them. And oh my God, there are like so many different ways to encode it. But in our special case, the qubits were encoded in so what you see in blue and the S1 half and the D5 half, and the qutrit as you see there. Later on, we have a Q-quint, which lives entirely in the D5½ subspace. And then everything is just a matter of how you control it. And in our case, so why is it 4 qubits and 1 qutrit? So I will explain this in a moment. Yeah, I will explain this now in the subsection, which is like how we simulate gauge fields and matter, with the goal to include both dynamic gauge fields and matter systems. And oh no, let me go back.
Sorry.
Yes.
So the state of the gauge boson is in qutrit, right? So
yes.
Are you going to simulate SU2 gauge theory here?
Come again?
Are you going to simulate SU2 gauge theory here?
Yeah, I should have mentioned this. So like in this demonstration, we're looking at a U1, like we're using quantum electrodynamics, because that was already difficult enough for us. But of course, it will be one of the next challenges to go to non-abelian gauge theories.
Okay, I thought this is convenient for three states of the gauge boson in SU3 gauge group. So three is representing the energy spectrum?
Yeah, so let me go. Oh no, I can actually see it here. There are like two gentlemen in the room who are also already working on non-abelian extensions. So that is something that we consider like really extremely important. Okay, but like extending the dimensionality was so difficult that we do it with U1 first. Okay, then what are the three levels? Okay, so we are doing one plaquette. So because we want to demonstrate the basic building block. And then we have qubits, which represents the matter. And since we have only one plaquette, we can use the Gauss law to eliminate 3 out of the 4 gauge links. Yeah. So like we can describe one plaquette with only one gauge field, which makes sense because there's one flux piercing one plaquette. Yeah. So if you have 3 plaquettes, you would have 3 gauge fields or 3 fluxes. Okay. So then, what are the 3 levels? Well, we are working, for the purpose of this paper, in the electric field basis. Yeah? So I mean, in principle, there would be a magnetic field basis, but we're working in the electric field basis. So this ladder here is basically depicting the eigenstates. So if I say 0, it's a 0 eigenvalue eigenstate of the electric field operator. So like it's a vacuum with respect to the electric field. And then basically the +1, is the +1. So there's one flux. And it goes all the way to plus infinity to minus infinity. And then the energy, the electric energy, would be a constant times this value square. Yeah. Yes.
It's a matter of choice, because I thought it would be more natural to put the state of each gauge boson into one. Q-dit system. For instance, for SU2, we need 3, and for SU3, we need 8. System with 8 levels. So, yes. Yeah. So I thought it's a matter of choice, right?
So, like with the SU2, it's actually really tricky because the truncation is also not so obvious in this case. So maybe you really want to connect to Yasa and us later. Yeah. Because we are thinking exactly about these questions. Because in U1, like cutting is like really straightforward. The truncation, I mean, there are more smart and maybe less smart ways to do it in terms of resources, but at least conceptually. Mm-hmm. Oh, but there's like such an interesting story as where to cut also, because where to cut also totally depends on the coupling that you want to look at, because there's a whole story with how many levels is enough. Yeah, so like we have an entire paper just how many levels are enough. Yeah.
And in this experiment, you're not sort of this fermionic nature of the. This not plays a role. Is that correct? Because the system is small enough because these fermionic fields at vertices, in principle, they enter.
Yes. I was just coming to this. Yes. Fermionic nature. Because now we put, like in 1D, I don't care whether it's fermions or spins, right? Like Jordan Wigner does exactly nothing, no? But in 2D it does.
Right.
In 2D it does. You could say this is why another reason why 2D is more interesting, no? Okay, so so the matter lives on the vertices, and now I have options, yeah? And the options that we are using here are the staggered fermions, which the high-energy physicists, like, we didn't make this up, no? Like, we're going with what the high-energy physicists are using, like, one of the methods, one of the favorite methods that they are using. And like every point in space, in principle, would have a two-component spinor where you have particles and antiparticles. Like, we are a new one. Okay, so in our case, particles and antiparticles means electrons and positrons only. Yeah. So we do have papers on SU2 and SU3. Like, we recently found out how to do SU3 in 1D. And you have, again, the expert here in the audience, but it's a bit different story. Like, actually, we had a divide and conquer approach. So first, find out how to do SU3, like all the colors, but in 1D, and also find out how to extend the dimensionality. And then, of course, one has to put both together. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but your fermions, right? So, like, on each point in space, I have a two-component spinor, and then to avoid the so-called fermion doubling problem, what I do is I divide my entire lattice into even lattice and odd lattice, like the even. So the even lattice is like all of those, and the odd lattice is the other one. And then you put all the particles can only live on the even, and all the antiparticles only on the odd. Exactly. And then we have this funny encoding according to the staggerization, that basically we have occupied or unoccupied, but we do a Jordan-Wigner. Oh, and there are options which Jordan-Wigner. We just tried, which gives us the best distribution of phases, like, because you can choose the Jordan-Wigner path, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it makes your Hamiltonian slightly more difficult, but like, it's definitely there.
Okay, but of course it's a very small Hamiltonian that you have in
this case. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You have a more general recipe.
Yes. Like, in this paper, because this is the experimental paper, there's only the one plaquette, but there's a separate theory paper in which we treat like more general length. Yes. Okay. And so the Hamiltonian per se is exactly what you would expect. So there is one term in the beginning which is taking care of our electric field strength, and there is one term which is taking care of the magnetic field strength, and there is a coupling G which is determining how strong one is compared to the other. So that would be the G, like how strong the coupling is, would be the bare electric charge. And then there's a small m is the bare mass of your particle. And the mass Hamiltonian just goes through your state and counts like how many particles or antiparticles you have. And you pay a price of m for every particle and every antiparticle. And then there's a kinetic term in the end, because particles must also be allowed to move. Okay, and then you just have like a Hamiltonian, which describes your entire system. And there's one more ingredient. So if this was like chemistry or condensed matter, you would be done. No? But like, this is particle physics and the Hamiltonian formalism, so we have a Gauss law on top of that that we must obey at all times, because I'm quickly going back to 3D and continuum just to remind you that this Gauss law takes this very familiar form that the divergent of the electric field has to be connected to the charge density. So basically, so the charges are the source. And you can just take your classical Gauss law, lift it to a quantum description, then go to 2D, and then discretize space. And if you have done all these steps, this very familiar law just takes on this symmetry constraint. So like, I could make a lot of states with my fermions and my gauge bosons, but not all of them are physical states. Not all of them respect my Gauss law. They must be an eigenstate of a symmetry operator. So these, it's a whole set of symmetry operators. Like, every lattice point n has its private symmetry operator. And you will totally, I hope, recognize that basically this is like a 2D divergence on a lattice, right? This is basically this. And then we also have a charge density. So these are the charges, but put on a lattice. Yeah. And this is in the zero charge subspace, zero static charge subspace. And basically it means that all your, like, you have a big Hilbert space, but then it's an exponentially small subspace of physically allowed states. And then That,
can you go back, sorry, can you
yes,
back
sure.
Because I was missing one slide before.
Even before.
Okay. So the matter couples to this U field, right? The U is expressed in turn in terms of the E's, right?
Field. So like here we have the kinetic, you're looking at the kinetic term.
Yeah.
Right, so.
Well, this is the coupling between the fermions and the gauge field.
Exactly, yes.
But U, so U is the gauge field, right?
Yes, U is the gauge field.
It has an expression in terms of E.
So this is exactly how gauge fields and the fermions couple, and this actually has a very nice physical interpretation, because this creates a particle, this destroys a particle, so this is a particle-antiparticle creation, and this is a gauge-invariant operator which beautifully respects the Gauss law, because if I create a particle-antiparticle pair, I must also create the flux in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and someone has to take care of creating the flux in between, and this is the raising operator. So what does this raising operator do? So this raising operator is basically, if you look at the ladder, the U, because if I have, suppose I have only the vacuum, no fermions whatsoever, also no field whatsoever, everything in vacuum, and then this term, psi dega psi, creates a pair, it must also create one flux in between,
okay.
So it's a raising which the previous vacuum goes to one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is why the whole Hamiltonian is like Gauss law preserving. Because you cannot do any unphysical, you cannot do anything unphysical with it. Yeah, and this is a U, and this is an operator which you have to represent by means of gauge fields. Yeah, so it's exactly in the ladder that we had. It, like if the gauge field was in the zero state, it would put the Q-trit one up. And this is also in the end of the day how we construct the circuit. Like you will see, we make a circuit which is not completely random, but we basically just look at the Hamiltonian and then give exactly the terms that the Hamiltonian wants. Yeah, but are there maybe more questions on?
You were saying the G, this is the coupling, because indirectly, that is indirectly feeding into the coupling with the matter, is that right? Is it strength?
Yes. So the most direct way to interpret the coupling is that it's giving me how much E field and how much B field I have.
So also the cost of going up.
Yes. Yeah. This is the cost of going up. And yeah, the pair creation, it will cost you twice, no? Because it costs you 2m, but it costs you also one unit of omega in between. Yeah. One unit of G squared in between. Yeah, that's the dynamics, basically. And like this Gauss law that I mentioned, is like we have a bunch of constraints, yeah? Not everything is allowed, but we can use the constraints and eliminate 3 out of 4 gauge fields, because if you just go through it, you will see if you know this one, you absolutely know all the others, yeah? So it's if you only want one plaquette, of course, later on we want a whole bunch of plaquettes and we know how to do it on paper. But if you want only one plaquette, it's okay to have one gauge field. Oh, even so, later we have a periodic plaquette, and then we have more gauge fields.
But then you have simulations that say that just losing 3 levels is pretty good, or?
Yeah, it depends what you want. Yeah. So there are simulations with 3 levels. You get. Okay, but let me. Yeah, like how much time do I have? Yeah, like I will probably not go through everything, but to this point I will get.
So in the Hamiltonian, you could also have a parity odd term like E dot B. Can you simulate?
As a what term?
E dot B term, parity odd term.
I could. Yes. How would I simulate that? I don't know. I would have to look at it. Because
in particular for like non-Abelian theories, it's very interesting to have, because it is in general, it is topological term, right?
Oh, yeah, topological, like those terms which basically Markov chain Monte Carlo would not be able, like that would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like actually we as quantum physicists, we are very interested in connecting to people who have interesting toy models, actually. Yeah, because like we are building now the toolbox, but we are very interested in what would be nice toy models, or where we see already some key physics, hopefully without making it too complex. Yes. Okay. So, but what do we do? What is the experiment even doing? Yeah. So what the experiment is even doing, we're in this particular experiment looking at a hybrid protocol where a quantum system, so the trapped ions in this case, is working in tandem with a classical optimizer. So we are using a variational quantum eigensolver. And what we do is, in essence, we make a ground state preparation. Yeah? So we prepare the ground state, and then we measure the plaquette expectation value, which is proportional to the magnetic field energy. And this is something that I personally was very keen to do because, you know, as someone who has done 1D all the time, the plaquette expectation value and really accessing magnetic properties was something that, like, there was never access to. Okay, so we are measuring, and by we I mean our experimental friends, measure the plaquette expectation value in the ground state. So how is this done? Well, so there's a variational circuit, which is basically an ansatz for the ground state wave function, but it has variational parameters. So there are two things to be said about the circuit. So the first thing is, like, if you're a future user, maybe of a system like this, you can also make a hybrid circuit. So this one is, for instance, hybrid in the sense that you have qubits and qutrits. Yeah? We also have later on one with qquints. Yeah? Like, you can match and play as is convenient for your model. And the second thing is, like, how did we come up with the circuit? So in this circuit, we were just looking at the Hamiltonian. And the Hamiltonian has certain symmetries. And the Hamiltonian has certain terms. And then basically, we read off the Hamiltonian terms from the Hamiltonian and use the corresponding gates here. And then this, of course, is no guarantee to reach the ground state. So they're like variational parameters which are tweaked in a closed feedback loop in order to approximate the ground state. Yeah, and in particular, there are some gates which are interspecies, so to say, where a qubit controls a qutrit here. And like finding high fidelity implementations for that was actually key. It was crucial. And also, it's a very short circuit. Yeah, so it would be a very long circuit in qubits, but it's a very short circuit in qutrits. And then the ground state preparation takes on the form of an optimization. This is an optimization run where the energy is minimized. And then in the end of the day, you get basically plaquette expectation value graph versus the coupling. I don't want to go into too much detail here. I just want to quickly talk about the savings. So just talking about the basic building block, like, we will get, of course, it's going to be even more crucial how much you save if you go for a bigger system. But even if you only look at one basic building block, you really see a difference. So here, I'm using the qudit encoding, specifically the qudit encoding that we chose, and compare it to a qubit encoding, and really using the exact same strategy with the exact same circuit. And here we're counting the C0s. And if you want to have your gauge fields the three levels, you would need 26 entangling gates. And here you would have 96 entangling gates by comparison.
So you're comparing entangling gates for qudits and qubits. But I'm curious, like, is the actual fidelity of doing an entangling qudit gate, like, comparable?
Yeah, surprisingly, yes.
Okay.
That's brand new. That has never been there before. Like, that is exactly the game changer.
Okay.
That's the game changer. Because, like, one of the reasons I think why qudit approaches have not been pursued, even though it was on the horizon, oh, you can do much fewer. But suppose, like, you have such a bad fidelity, and then you have very few, but they're all crappy, then it doesn't get you. So it becomes interesting once you are in a situation where the fidelity is actually comparable. And like, this has now been found out,
okay,
how to do that. Yeah, that is exactly the exciting point here. Okay, but like, I... Sure.
Q, the plaquette expectation value is an energy observable?
Come again?
Plaquette expectation value, is it an energy observable?
Yeah, I should not call it an energy. It's proportional to the expectation value of the magnetic field term of the Hamiltonian, to be more precise.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay, so now I was talking about qubits and qutrits, but qutrits are an absolute minimal thing that you can do. So one could get greedy and ask, Yeah, so can we increase that? Can I be even better, even more efficient? And I mean, we were, like, don't get me wrong, we were really happy that we could see the relevant physics that we expected with only three levels, yeah? So, like, we were very happy about that. But it was all with the minimal truncation, and now we wanted to study how we can improve the truncation and be more gentle on our theory to allow for more states. And the next thing is to go to d equals 5. And we switched a bit gears. And so before, our goal was really to do the whole gauge theory with matter and gauge field and the interplay between matter and gauge. But now we want just to study how to increase the d. So we went to a pure gauge theory. So from now on, there are no fermions anymore on my slides. But we also switched to a periodic plaquette. So before I was talking to an open plaquette, now I'm talking about the period, like 2D QED, but now I go to periodic boundary conditions. But again, I go to the minimal version. So like the minimal version is, this looks a bit funky, but like it's a lattice of four vertices, and I have periodic boundary condition in absolutely all directions. Yeah, and in 2D, this just happens to be a donut. Okay, so this is what I'm talking about now. Okay, and then the Hamiltonian becomes much easier because I'm throwing out all fermionic parts. So I really have only the electric field and the magnetic field only. So what is our system? It's like our four vertices, but they're always in vacuum. And then if you count, you will find H links. So a priori, I would have eight gauge fields. But then again, we have our Gauss law, so I can again use this redundancy and make a good transformation. And then you will find, oh, only five of them are independent. Actually, the three that are left, you know them if you know the others. Okay, so I have to simulate five in principle. But then again, I want to know the plaquette expectation value in the ground state. And if I'm not interested in any excited state observables, but if I restrict myself to the ground state, there are only three gauge fields responsible for the ground state. So like the simulations that we did on quantum hardware are actually with three gauge fields. And the three gauge fields, I'm glossing over this now because I was showing you the Hamiltonian, but the description was kind of inconvenient. So we made a better description in terms of gauge invariant operators. Yeah, it's just a more, all the details are in this paper, so there's a just more, yeah, easier on the brain description where basically one can describe basically three loops or three plaquettes in the Hamiltonian. And then we convinced our experimental friends to do the following experiment. So this is an experiment which was done first with Q-trits, and then the exact same thing again, but with Q-quints, yeah? So the first one was a pure Q-trit circuit, the second was a pure Q-quint circuit. And that's maybe a bit funny way to write the circuit, but there are like three Q-quints in the beginning, and each of them represents one gauge field. And then this little fanning out is we want to make the internal states visible, and then there are some local gates. I mean, in the qubit description, these have been entangling gates, but now they're completely local. So they are done with amazingly high fidelity. And then they're inter-qubit gates, basically. And then measurements in the end. And I will just briefly mention that you do capture the ground state better if you allow for more levels. You do capture the ground state better if you allow more levels. And we did see this in the experiment. Yeah, and I will be happy to explain this later how exactly, but now I want to be sure to allow for enough time for questions. Yeah, I will explain this later if there are questions. For now, I end with the take-home messages. The take-home messages is that the experimentalists succeeded in a full VQE ground state search for three-level Q-trits and five-level Q-quints. And if you had told this my old self that you can do a full VQE with Q-quints, she would have been very surprised. Yeah, so that was really only possible of this very nice encoding and these very nice gates And this is also something why I believe we can be really ambitious and do even more protocols with Q-trits and Q-quins. And I see great potential, especially for gauge theories, because gauge theories like really want to be simulated in that way. And yeah, these Q-dits specifically allow for seamlessly observe the effect of different gauge field truncations. And it's like also experimentally fairly straightforward, because it's literally the same, it's both calcium 40, it's like literally the same system. So it's all in the control, simply. And with the conclusions, is what we are happy and proud of is that we were able to describe gauge theories for particle physics beyond 1D, like including both dynamical gauge fields and matter fields, like with this open plaquette that I showed, but also with an adjustable discretization of the gauge fields. And we were benefiting from short gate depth, and that was even more dramatic for the Q-quin pure gauge. Like there, the savings were really, it would be completely unfeasible. Like Q-quins, break it down in qubits, like you're never going to do that, yeah? At least with the current state of the art. And the outlook is zooming out, there's a long-term vision, because now we have learned how to do 2D, the next interesting thing will be how to do 3D, because like the major conceptual hurdles are taken, then of course scaling up the system size, go to more plaquettes, but both going to more dimensions and more plaquettes makes an efficient description of the gauge field even more important. No? And these Q-dit techniques, like we did it for trapped ions, but there are really exciting developments also with superconducting qubits, Q-dits, like also brand new happening now. So it can be implemented on many different platforms. And like I was talking about an equilibrium problem, but per se, you can take this method and do quench dynamics with that. Yeah, so that would also be another way to apply those things. Then we are curious to learn how to apply it in chemistry and material science. So we are already saw some very interesting papers from Susanne Yellen in Harvard, actually, where they're in contact with chemists, and they take chemistry models and they cast it in the language of spin models, but spin models not with Pauli matrices, but which have these large spin in there. And then again, you have a Hamiltonian where you think, oh, like it's a high dimensional spin model, like which would really benefit from using Q-dits directly. And that's again a reminder of the Q-dit workshop. So we want to bring together theorists, but also experimentalists, and we are also especially interested in developing the machinery, like for instance all the things that you need, like error mitigation, error correction, randomized benchmarking. There's a lot of things to be done, and we would love to join forces with everyone who wants to join us on this. Yeah, the workshop, actually we are going to talk about algorithm simulations, networks, and sensing also. Yeah. This is actually just the beginning. And we still have time for questions.
I'm interested in the last circuit diagram you showed. Is this just, it seems that each case acting on two internal states. Is it just for visualization or?
No, in reality, yes. Yeah. So like if you make an entangling gate between two qubits, you have so much freedom.
Yeah,
you have so much freedom. It's not like in qubits where basically you have a C naught and everything is equivalent, no? No, but you have now a lot of freedom. And then we were wondering, okay, we have so many choices, what should we do? Yeah, but then we went back to our Hamiltonian, and actually we saw that our Hamiltonian has a special wish, in a sense, yeah? So that our Hamiltonian wants to respect Gauss law, yeah? And that naturally led us, like, I sometimes call it my Gauss gate, yeah? Because this is maybe more for the other, that would be more clearly explained, I think, for the other circuit. And then we translated it here, where the circuit is basically. I'm sure it was there. Yeah, so basically, so these are the matter qubits which are in the beginning in the vacuum, but we know the plaquette gets populated. And basically, populating a plaquette, so basically, what happens here is this, this basically is switching on some excitations, yeah? So this has the power to go from zero, zero to, I mean, vacuum, vacuum, to electron-positron pair. But, or here also, but if there's an electron-positron pair, so let's say I created one here, it's checking it, and if it was, if there was one, like you allow basically the qutrit to switch in one or the other direction, yeah. And basically the Q-quint circuit is a, like more an extension of this logic, but like you're entirely correct in the observation that we are defining qubit subspaces in the qubit, yeah, and then it's basically making a swap only between two levels, but that was just our choice and you would not have to do this. And there are other gate definitions which are much more all-encompassing, which is, which are encompassing more levels.
So is it non-trivial to kind of take your physical scenario and expand it to like 5, 7, 9 levels? Or is it like a very much we have to start and redesign the whole thing again? So like if the experimenter said that we can, and also I don't know if the experimenter setup allows like easily to go to higher levels, but if it did, could you use them easily from the, your theory, or do you really have to work hard to design the algorithm to work for like...
You mean for me to design the algorithm or for the experimentalist to do the encoding,
I
or both?
Both.
Yeah.
Like you did it with five like Q-quints, I think, for the last one. Basically, how hard would it be to go to 7, like from both the theory and the experiment side?
Yes. So for us, from the theoretical side, 7 gets hard because like of this guy. Yeah, so because if you make the qubit dimension too big, like calculations just take forever. Like, I mean, I could write the circuit because we're just reading it off, right? So we are constructing it. But for the purpose of the research project, like you want to have an ED simulation, and that grows like really fast, so that gets really difficult. And for the, so that's our main problem here. And from the experimental side, in principle, you can go to 7. So there is a small thing which I didn't mention, which is that the encoding and the transition are kind of optimized to minimize noise. So we're, because they're, what is bothering the experiment most are relative phases, because when I have a qubit, I have only one relative phase, but if I have a qutrit, like I have two relative phases, and so this is basically what is, and there are two different phase compensation methods, one active and one passive one, and one works much better, and the other one only second best. And then basically the encoding is chosen such that the transition which is used all the time is the one which is compensated best. Mm. Yeah. So and that would have to be readjusted, but like you do it once. Yeah. And then of course there's a bit overhead, for instance, in so whenever we drive one transition, other spectator levels, like spectator levels are the ones that are not directly touched, like not this one, not this one, not this one, spectator levels, they get an AC stack shift, because the way how an I, at least for trapped ions, how it's done is we've done very high intensity laser fields, because it's based on the so-called Dirac-Zoller gate, which uses high omega. So like you get a relatively high AC stack shift, and those have to are currently compensated in software. Yeah, so like this, so you have a linear increase in control that you have to keep track of. Yeah.
Is that software like, that's not after the fact, that's like during the time of the computation. So you sort of, you do that gate and then you have to sort of do how you perform a later gate compensated by the earlier one.
Yeah, but like here, I'm slowly but surely getting out of my depth because these are the experimental details. Yes, yes, yes. So I'm better don't say anything before I say something incorrect. Yeah, but like this is also interesting because like we are now interested in making an error model because then we think how we can avoid the errors and then yeah, but that's all new because we know all of this so well for the qubits, but it's like brand new for the qubits. Yeah.
So to work, you show the circuit architecture for 2D case with periodic boundary condition.
Yeah.
How much that depends on if I choose periodic anti-periodic boundary conditions.
How much it changes if I go from periodic to open?
I mean, you have periodic in two directions. If I choose periodic anti-periodic, then the topology would be different.
Totally changes my entire Hamiltonian. Yeah, so like we have another paper where we look at a cube, like we do the whole thing, but like on a cube, and we looked at a cube with open boundary conditions, with only one periodic, two open, then with two periodic and one open, and one with everything periodic, and change the Hamiltonian entirely every single time. And yeah, I can explain why, but it's a very different scenario.
And for the non-Abelian case, I'm more interested. Is it easier to start a pure gauge theory without matter first and find the spectrum of like blue balls and then they add fermions? I mean,
yeah.
It's not easier to start a pure gauge theory, right?
Yes, but like I'm so greedy. Yes, yes, yes. Like a pure gauge theory, even a couple, okay, 2D pure gauge theory, there are a couple of works out there in SU2. Already and like beginning with SU3 also, but like as you said, so basically we have pure glue states, but we don't have any matter.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean to learn how to simulate it, it's certainly a good step. Yeah.
Next question too. In these qubit systems, is there like a Hadamard gate?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah, there's a qubit extension of a Hadamard gate. Yeah, not only one, many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Any other questions? If not, let's thank Christine.